This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hub Arkish.
I like this kind of party.
The Score's senior football expert.
Once you put all the evidence that we have together, that's the bottom line.
Pro Football Weekly, Shaw Media, and Westwood One.
It goes deep. Hub does too.
Analyzing the Bears and the NFL.
This was an ongoing conversation at Hallis Hall for literally a couple months.
Hub Arkish with Bernstein and McKnight on The Score.
The top of the hour is brought to you by the Chicago Wolves, Allstate Arena. Tonight, 7 p.m., the Chicago Wolves host Grand Rapids in a battle for first place in the American Hockey League Central Division. Visit ChicagoWolves.com for tickets and join in the quest to be the last team standing. Hub Arkish of Pro Football Weekly and Sports Radio 670. The Score on Twitter at Hub_Arkish and with us now on WSCR. The Score. Hi, Hub. How are you?
I'm good. How you guys doing?
Good. We're trying to look at a remodeled defensive coaching staff. At some point, even with all of the returning players, it's got to matter that there's this many different voices and this many different positional rooms and at the top of one side of the ball.
Well, I think to ignore the possibility of some issues with transition would be kind of short-sighted. But I still don't see it as a potential disaster down the road. There are a ton of qualified NFL position coaches. There are a number of NFL qualified coordinators. And then, of course, there's only a handful of really good head coaches. But when you look at the guys qualified to coordinate this defense, I don't think you could have found a better candidate than probably Chuck Pagano. He's got not only the coordinator experience, not much coordinator experience, but he's got 6 years successful head coaching experience, and he's got a pretty interesting coaching tree of his own. I mean, he has hired some very good coaches, including Bruce Arians and Greg Minuski and Terrell Austin, just a few that come to mind off the top of my head. So, you know, I think he'll put a good staff together. Now, all of that said, obviously these guys were at the top of their game this past season for the position coaches they had. And so each of the new position coaches is going to have to form his own communication and alliance with his group. And that could take some time. I think that it's probably likely that they will not be playing as well on defense week one as they will week four or week five.
So I wanted to ask what you've seen coaching staff specifically on the defensive side of the ball when continuity is not going to be something in your favor going into another year. What they do to mitigate that, like you said, is that individual rooms? Is that on a position by position basis where you fight some of that and where you succeed there?
Yeah, and you know, guys, there's going to be a ton of work done long before they get to training camp. I mean, once the off-season program starts, the assistant coaches will be around the building. I mean, they're limited in terms of, you know, actual classroom work and what they can do, but they certainly can get to know their players. And then between the OTAs, now they are going to have just the one mini camp this year because you don't have Matt Nagy as a rookie head coach anymore. But even with OTAs, there are meetings involved with that they are allowed to have. And so the key is going to be for all these new position coaches to get to know their players and get their communication styles down pat. It's going to be very important for Matt Nagy and Chuck Pagano and each of these new position coaches on defense to evaluate the guy that they're replacing and maybe what their style was and at least be aware if there's going to be some radical changes in style and make sure that they do things to overcome that. But by the time they get to training camp, you know, each position group should be at least very familiar, if not relatively comfortable with their new coach.
It appeared that there is a possibility that they would entertain signing Kareem Hunt. What was your takeaway from that press conference, from their how candid they were about it, from the fact that they specifically avoided closing the door on a controversial, troubled running back?
You know, it's to me, it's such a hot button topic, Dan, and everybody talking about it, that I've gone back and reread every quote from both Pace and Nagy, you know, four, five, six times. Ryan Pace, in fact, said nothing to indicate that he would consider Hunt. He simply said, "We're not there yet." And he said it a couple different ways, but that's really all he said. Now, Matt Nagy handled it very differently. He also was very clear that they're not there yet, that that's not something he's thinking about. But he did voice a very strong personal concern for the young man. He did talk about being raised to believe in second chances. Now, he said all the right things about, of course, you have to earn that second chance, and we're not there yet. So I do think it's fair to say, from what Nagy told us, that something he wouldn't rule out. I don't think Pace has commented on it at all, and we have no idea if either Ryan or Matt or both have spoken to the McCaskies about it. So,
but saying yet, if he says we're not there yet, that's very different than saying that he is not going to be a Chicago Bear.
Yeah, but what he said, he didn't say they're not there yet in terms of whether they'd sign him or not. He said they're not there yet in terms of whether they'd consider it. And that to me is pretty clear. Again, Matt Nagy didn't say that, but Ryan Pace, in each of his answers, if you go back and read them, he said, we're not thinking about it. He said, we're not there yet. We're not at that point. We're trying to fill out our coaching staff. And I think one of the reasons Ryan has to be so careful is that the roster is his. I mean, you know, he was pretty clear in that presser when asked about Pagano. He said, well, you know, hiring coaches is up to Matt. Talk to him about it. Mm-hmm. The roster is his, and he knows it's not a move he can make unilaterally without checking how the organization feels about it. And I believe that they're not there yet. You know, the thing is fresh. He hasn't been punished yet. There's probably more information coming out. So I know it's something that we're all focused on because it's what we do and because it seems like a natural possibility. And I was a little surprised. David Haugh and I talked about this on the air Monday night. Dave was good enough to come out with me because he and I sat next to each other during the press conference, and we completely agreed that we were a little surprised how open and conversational Matt Nagy was about it. Mm-hmm. But again, Nagy said, you know, we can't even consider signing him right now. We're not there yet. You know, Pace said we're not considering it at all yet. So, you know, all we can do is take them at their word, but I do understand why we're all reading so much into it.
How important for you was it to hear Ryan Pace say these hires, the coaching hires, are Matt's hires? Because I had been left with a little bit of uncertainty as to whether or not that was going to be a collaborative effort to hire the next defensive coordinator. There was the way in which you kept Vic Fangio around. Was that a change of direction for them, or was that how you understood it was going to be going into that day?
No, I mean, you know, Connor, it was a collaborative effort in terms of, you know, getting a ready list, interviewing. I'm sure that Ryan interviewed with him too, but they've been pretty clear, and this was pretty clear with John Fox, and it's been very clear since Nagy got here that Nagy's coaching staff is his, that the 90-man roster is Ryan's, and the 53-man roster, for the most part, if a tie has to be broken, is Ryan's, but that comes down to, you know, they need to get there together when they make their final cuts.
What did you make of the very clear non-statement statement about Cody Parkey?
I mean, I can't blame him. You know, I think, you know, I mean, again, this is something Dave and I talked about, David Haugh and I. Nagy wasn't just, you know, answering the question. He was pissed. you couldn't really read it any other way. And I think probably what he's upset about is that it's not that the TV thing in and of itself is such a big deal. It's just that it was a bad idea, which was magnified that much by the timing of it and the fact that nobody knew it was coming. And I think what he was so upset about is that the team reacted exactly the way he's taught them to and wanted them to, sticking up for Parkey to a man. And they really did. They were great in the locker room the Monday after the game. And then for him to show up Friday morning on a national TV show receiving some phony honor from people who didn't know his name was Parkey and not Parker, I think that offended everybody, you know, and I'm sure a lot of his teammates who were supporting him weren't real happy about it either. Not because it's, you know, some high crime or even misdemeanor, but because exactly as Nagy said, they try and make everything about the team, and that was a very selfish moment. You know, he was looking for some type of acceptance or vindication for himself, And I don't know how you expect to get that without realizing. I don't think he cost him the game. They didn't lose the game because of Cody Parkey, but he blew his chance to win it. And so why should he be out there getting validated when nobody else is? So it just had a real bad feel about it. And again, Ryan Pace is always going to be, you know, less committal. He's going to be, you know, more buttoned up, closer to the vest. You know, he was adamant. Yes, there will be competition at the position. And one nuance that I don't think anybody's talked about is he didn't say that Parkey was going to be part of that competition. You know,
right.
So we'll see how that goes. But in the Matt Nagy case, I was a little surprised at how, you know, quite frankly, angry he seemed to be, only because he hasn't shown that side the first 11 months here. But he was pretty comfortable, pretty clearly uncomfortable with that conversation.
Do you think Ryan Pace would draft a kicker?
If there was one he liked, absolutely. But I think they've shown that there's nothing they won't consider in terms of adding talent and building this roster. Now, you know, there's nothing wrong with drafting a kicker if you get the right guy. The Vikings go use the pick on Carlson and cut him 3 weeks in last year, but then he goes out and has a pretty good year in Oakland. It looks like he could be the answer for a while. So if you get the right guy, then you use a, you know, fifth, sixth, seventh round pick on him. Now, you know, taking Roberto Aguayo in the second or third round, that's obviously pretty dumb. But yeah, I could see them using a day three pick if they thought that they'd identified a guy they had to have.
Even in a year where your top couple of picks have gone to acquiring Khalil Mack?
Yes, because you'll get him on an inexpensive rookie contract that helps to nullify some of the expense of not having Parkey.
What has underpinned the Kareem Hunt discussion is the fact that the Bears publicly and privately have expressed a desire to have a little bit more dynamic presence in the backfield alongside Tariq Cohen, that they want this offense needs somebody who can stretch the field a little bit, who can run the wheel routes, who can catch the ball, move laterally, et cetera. And Kareem Hunt is not only a guy to do that, he's the guy to do it. It's the rushing leader. It's right in front of him to have an immediate answer after whatever suspension is served. Yet, Hub, it's a running back, and you should be able to find that guy wherever you want to find him. How do you think they're going to address this? Because we saw it with the way they force-fed Taequann Mizell into this, certainly about halfway through the season. That what do you think Pace is going to do? Let's take Hunt out of the equation completely and just say that's not going to happen. What's the best way for them to get faster, quicker, more versatile in the backfield?
Well, Dan, just before we eliminate Hunt, let's just remember he was a third-round pick.
Right.
They have a third-round pick. Jordan Howard was a fifth-round pick. So, I mean, this is something they're absolutely going to address during the draft. You know, the one name you're going to hear a lot of is Darius Geis out of Stanford, because everybody thought he was a top 15, top 20, and he surprised everybody and went back this year and then tore an ACL. So, you know, he's not going to be working out for anybody. He could very well be sitting there on day three.
Bryce Love.
You know, Bryce Love is who we're talking about. You know, if he is sitting there on day three, I would expect the Bears to take a flyer at him. I would keep an eye on Tevin Coleman, who is a free agent after, you know, sharing time with, you know, Deontay Freeman in Atlanta. And I don't think Atlanta is going to re-sign him. He is the style of back you're talking about. I don't know if he has the top-end speed that Hunt and certainly some of these other guys have, but he is of that style. The only name in free agency that I'm aware of right now, I know people love to have the Le'Veon Bell conversation, but he is no better fit for Matt Nagy's offense than Jordan Howard is. You know, he's a good pass catcher, but that's not what specifically you're looking for here. So, you know, I would say all of the above, free agency, draft, and even undrafted rookie free agents. It's a position, you know, I thought, you know, Baker Mayfield got the award. I thought Philip Lindsay was the offensive rookie of the year this year. And, you know, he was an undrafted rookie free agent at running back. So they'll dot all the I's.
Do you have any sense of how aggressive they want to be with their own cap space? I mean, I guess in reading around, it looks like maybe $15 or $19 million, something like that. And there are moves they could make with their own. Do they want to do that, or do they feel as though returning most of a 12-4 team is good enough?
You know, Connor, first of all, I have to apologize to our listeners because I've been dealing with a bad number. I've been studying these charts, and I kept coming to about $20 million in available cap space before the cap increases by $10 million. But these charts I just noticed have already added the $10 million, which is a bit risky because you don't know exactly what it's going to go up by. So, you know, I kept saying they had about $18 to $20 million, would get another $10. They've got about $18 to $20 million after the other $10. So that's where you're starting. I was looking at this just last night. There are probably three or four contracts that could be adjusted and create another, you know, $5 to $10 million in cap space. I'm sure they will look at that if for no other reason than it's good business. They normally you have to save $4 to $5 million for your rookie pool. They won't have to save, you know, they'll save half of that because they don't have the first and second round pick. So I'm sure they'll be as creative as they can with the cap. But at the end of the day, you're now looking at a best case scenario where they've got maybe $25 million in cap space and needing to either sign or replace, even though it's only three starters, in Bobby Massey and Adrian Amos and Bryce Callahan, you could eat up, you're not going to eat it all up, but you could eat up a chunk of it right there. So they are somewhat handcuffed because of, you know, now the other side of that, though, is that they do have all this top-end talent. You know, they also have to be sensitive to the fact that if Trubisky is the answer, they're going to have to redo him in a year or two, and that's going to require a ton of space. You've also got a few other up-and-comers that they may want to look at. They got to decide what to do with Cody Whitehair. Do they want to let him get to free agency after this year? So, yeah, I think they'll be examining their cap options as closely as possible. They'll do some things to free up space. The two big ones that jump off at you, and I've been asked this question, could Kyle Long be a cap casualty? That would create about $8 million in cap space, and I would say absolutely not. They still know he's their best offensive lineman on an average offensive line. The fact that he did come back and play, I just don't see that happening. The other interesting one, though, is Charles Leno is going to have an $8.5 million cap hit this coming year. Now, I know they like him more than I do, and I don't think he's horrible. I just don't think he's a great answer there. Without a first and second round pick, it's hard to address left tackle. But if you want to talk about cap casualties, the only two guys that would really move the needle for him would be Long and Leno, and I don't see their ability to let either one of those guys go.
Oh, there you have it. We're going to do more with Hub after a brief timeout, talk about the Championship Sunday games that are coming your way on The Score. Rams at Saints, Pats and Chiefs, what those teams have in common, what the Bears might be able to emulate from some of what they've been doing. Although, you know, Bears weren't bad this year.
Yeah.
They really weren't. They might
decent
be
run.
Might be home, but they weren't bad. It's not like most years when we're looking at 3-13 and saying, how can we get more like that? I think Bears, they've got their team, they've got their plan, and we will see what Hub thinks of these games.
More with Hub when we come back. It's Bernstein and McKnight, 670 The Score.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
This segment's brought to you by Subway. Subway now delivers your favorite subs, salad, or signature wrap straight to your door. Go to subway.com/delivers to order with Uber Eats, Grubhub, DoorDash, or Postmates. Delivery available in selected areas. See subway.com/delivers for details. We are talking football with Hub Arkish, as we do on Wednesdays during football season.
Just in the interest, Hub, of tying up loose ends, we were talking about the cap situation the Bears find themselves in before we move on to the playoffs. A lot of listeners and Bears fans, I assume, texting in asking about Deion Sims. Figured we'd forward that on to you as well.
Yeah, Deion Sims actually is another one who there will be some cap savings. Not any dead cap money, but he's on the books for about a $7 or $8 million salary. So my guess would be that he will be released and that they will pick up that money.
Gotcha.
The four teams remaining, the Rams, the Saints, the Pats, the Chiefs, those are in some order the top four offenses in the NFL this year. Connor just sort of threw out, he spitballed a number for Bears points per game next year, 24. That would be a touchdown better per game.
More.
Than last year. And I said, you give me 24 points a game, I don't care about all this defensive turnover, you're going to get to your 10 wins and you're going to get your playoff spot. Is that really the lesson to be learned, that you got to make defensive plays when the time comes, but the only way to really get yourself there is have one of these offenses?
Well, you know, when we say one of these offenses, you got to be better than the Bears were. I mean, you know, we learned that much. But, you know, some of these high-powered offenses, even though they are playing on Sunday, really struggled on the stretch. I mean, the Chiefs were 3-3. The Patriots were 4-3. I think the Saints, I want to say, were 3-2. Rams, these were all 500 teams late in the season. So, obviously, it helps now. Actually, the Saints didn't really do that much on offense to win their playoff game. You know, certainly the Patriots and the Chiefs and the Rams did. So, it is an ongoing trend in the NFL. But I think the other thing that you saw with teams like the Bears and the Colts and even the Chargers, as disappointing as they were last weekend, is that they kind of brought defense back too. You know, so I certainly agree, though, that if the Bears can score 24 points a game next year, they're going to be in pretty good shape.
You made a mention of Sean McVay, I think it was last week or something, and all these organizations hiring coaches like Sean McVay because you want to have something like that. You kind of made an offhand remark that you'd like to see him win a playoff game. I ran with that in my head thinking, my God, if he doesn't, what does that say about so many others? Do the Rams, because of the weeks that they've had coming up to these playoffs, have the most to prove to you? Is that something where they've really got to show a backbone or something?
Well, I was very impressed actually with the way the defense played Saturday night. You know, they had been pretty awful for quite some time, and I mean they held Ezekiel Elliott to 47 or 49 yards on 22 carries. It was really impressive. The secondary is still not very good. I wouldn't want Marcus Peters on my team, but other than that, I think the Rams, it's not that I doubted that McVay could. Last year was his first crack at the playoffs. He certainly showed that he learned his lesson, and I thought his game plan was brilliant. Obviously the Patriots have nothing to prove, and we know about the Saints. I might argue that it's still the Chiefs. I can't ignore that. Going into last week, 0-7 at home, 1-10 overall over the last 25 years. And yes, they beat up pretty impressively on a Colts team, and I was very surprised and impressed by the Colts. But it is one of those, they weren't worst to first, only because they tied for last in the division last year and lost the tiebreaker for last with the Texans. But, you know, after the 1-5 start, they had the great run. They had some quality wins. But it's a roster you still see some holes in. Andy Reid's playoff record at home in Kansas City had been awful. And in Philadelphia, while he did win some playoff games, remember the wrap was 5 straight NFC title games and only 1 Super Bowl trip. So the Chiefs' defense certainly has some unique weapons in Chris Jones and Dee Ford, guys you don't know a lot about. But now this is the Patriots coming in. And so if there's a team that I wonder about the most this weekend, for me, it's still the Chiefs.
The bottom of the hour is brought to you by the Chicago Wolves, Allstate Arena. Tonight, 7 p.m., the Chicago Wolves host Grand Rapids battle for first place in the American Hockey League Central Division. Visit ChicagoWolves.com for tickets and join in the quest to be the last team standing. It looks, Hub, like we're going ice bowling again this weekend, that the Arctic Blast is coming to Kansas City. And I read a statistic today that in the 10 coldest ever NFL games, no team has scored 30 points. So that is simply something that happens in these frigid, frigid games. We don't know exactly what the low is going to be. There's a wide range there. But where are you on these things, balancing the novelty with the fairness of asking elite athletes to perform under such conditions?
Well, you know, Dan, I mean, I don't know. I mean, the novelty part, who needs it? Nobody wants to sit out there when it's zero. But some of these teams perform in these conditions in the regular season to get here. I mean, you know, we see games like this in December, earlier in the playoffs. And I don't think you change the rules just because it's the championship game. I think it's part of the advantage to the Chiefs of having gotten the home field, and I'm sure they wish that they didn't have another northern team like the Patriots coming in, who probably have as much experience in the conditions as they do. But it's the nature of the game. You know, it's the way the game is played. We were kidding about this on the air yesterday. I have the distinction of having been the sideline reporter for what is recognized by the league as the coldest playoff game in history, just temperature, not wind chill. Remember, I did the Vikings and the Seahawks 3 years ago when they were playing at University of Minnesota Stadium, and the temperature was 9 below on the field at kickoff. And it wasn't the most comfortable day I've ever had, but it wasn't that different by my observation for the players, the coaches, and even the support people. That was a 12-9 game. You're right, the scoring was limited, but I think that was limited more by those two teams had two of the best defenses in the league, and neither one of them were particularly good on offense. And, of course, that was the game where Blair Walsh shanked the field goal at the end. But the one I look back on most is the upset of the Packers by the Giants, who then went to the Super Bowl a couple of weeks later and actually upset the Patriots too. But in that game, you know, Favre and Manning threw the ball around pretty well. Receivers made plays. It was zero. So I just think it's part of the game, and you know it's a possibility. And, you know, nobody's dying to play or watch in those conditions, but that's part of what you sign up for.
What's the most likely outcome for Antonio Brown and the Steelers?
Well, you know, it's interesting because I don't know how. He's a surefire, probably first ballot Hall of Famer. I don't think you still just release him, even if he's not in his prime. He's certainly at 98% of it and may still be in his prime. You can trade him for lesser value because of the baggage he brings. But right now, we're having a hard time finding people who might be interested in acquiring him. It's a full Botosaurus, if you know what I mean. I know Dan knows what I mean. It's tough right now. I don't think Kevin Colbert, Mike Tomlin know what they're going to do. They're going to try and trade him. But right now, it's just not much of a marketplace. So he has really backed them into a tough corner.
Yeah, I wonder what it says that it's happening again to the Steelers.
Right.
We always talk about these cultures and all this, but I don't know if you can just pin the blame on somebody. People have said it's the leadership of Roethlisberger. Mike Tomlin is losing control of his team. But twice? Really? You're going to go through something like this where you've got somebody in a mega star in limbo?
Well, you know, I think it's probably the very, you know, high odds of getting stuck with not one but two of the biggest divas in the NFL. Because when you look at the rest of that Steeler roster, minus Roethlisberger, who, if you recall, was actually even a bigger jerk 3-4 years ago than these guys have proven to be with his off-the-field peccadilloes, he seems to have cleaned up his act. But the rest of that locker room is really solid veteran-type guys, you know, who seem to be pretty high-character guys. I know I would absolutely want a Cameron Hayward or a David DeCastro or a Ramon Foster, Marcus Gilbert. These guys, I'd want them in my locker room any day. So I don't think it's systemic. I don't think it's that the Steelers have come apart and don't know what they're doing. And I don't think, Bell's always been a little bit crazy, but I think this Brown stuff has really escalated over the last two seasons. And maybe it's because he was the sixth-round pick out of Central Michigan, and you know, it took a while for his ego to catch up with his craziness. So it's certainly unfortunate. It certainly leaves the Steelers in a bad position, but I don't know that I'd read a lot more into it than that.
Who's the right team to make a bet on Nick Foles?
Oh, don't rule out the Oakland Raiders, because I'm hearing more and more that John Gruden is unhappy with David Carr. Don't rule out the Baltimore Ravens, who can kid themselves all they want if they think they have a future with Lamar Jackson. Certainly the Cincinnati Bengals. Excuse me, guys. This voice has been gone for 5 weeks. I don't know what's up. Don't rule out the Bengals, who know now that Andy Dalton's probably not the answer, and they're redoing that coaching staff. I wouldn't rule out the Arizona Cardinals. That would be a shorter-term deal, most likely, but Josh Rosen is a long ways off. And then there's going to be a surprise team or two, you know, that we haven't quite identified yet. I don't know, you know, what you got Matt Patricia and Bob Quinn thinking about Matt Stafford after this season, you know, and that's a contract they'd love to be able to unload. So there's going to be a couple surprises in the group, but those first three, four teams that I mentioned are the ones I'm hearing the most about right now.
Hub, thanks. We'll let you rest your voice. Appreciate it.
Hey, guys, I left out the Miami Dolphins. You got to plug the Dolphins into that equation on Foles, too.
That is Hub Arkish. Tomorrow he will answer your calls.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.